Baptist church, so I know a Baptist preacher without a clock is a dangerous man. So I will try to make sure that I don't exceed the time limit. Again, I am an elder at North Langley Community Church. I also am chaplain at Trinity Western University. And as Dave said, the focus of my getting my PhD, if you get a PhD, it is comprised of two parts. One is the coursework, and you take some big exams at the end. But the second, you do that for 3.5 years, and then the next 2.5 years, you write a paper, and it has to have meet certain criteria. And I wanted the focus of my research to be something that really would be of benefit to the people that I serve among, particularly at Trinity Western. I've worked with university students pretty much my whole career. And I just began to see that an increasing number of men and women on the spectrum of faith, some people who were just barely trying to figure Christianity out, and for other people for whom their faith was a central part of their life, that pornography was increasingly becoming an issue that they were struggling with. And I know in a group like this, there will be some. The issue of pornography has not been an issue. It likely will not be an issue. But for some, if Jesus were to come here and were to ask you, like he asked blind Bartimaeus, what would you like me to do for you? This is the issue that you would want him to rid you of. Because I just talked to too many people, both people that are out, you know, that are married in families, and people that I work with at Trinity Western for whom this is an issue. So that's a little bit of my background as to why I think this is important. And I know that it is one that, as I speak, that I do have a heavy heart for those for whom this is an issue. And I pray that God will use just these few moments together. I would encourage you to come back tonight for our time together. It'd be a great discussion. It's a provocative film, so just so you know that. But it starts a discussion that I think is so necessary. Because if it's not you, it's definitely people that you know and your kids. I have 2 teenage kids myself. So this is a road that we are walking. My wife and I are walking together. How do we help people develop a healthy sense of sexuality in the midst of the world that we live in? So I want to proceed with 3 points here. Is that this is just like we sang just a moment ago, that the penalty of sin has been paid by Jesus. That Colossians 1:19 says that he has reconciled us through the death of his physical body, and we are holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation. So that moves me, and I hope that it moves our time together, us together, when we think about that. And that sin does not have to be master over us. Romans 6 makes that clear, that because of the cross, that the power of sin is broken. It's not the last word in our lives. I know I talk with people all the time who feel like this is an issue that I cannot overcome. But the promise of the Bible is that we are holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation, and that sin does not have to be master over us. That is the gospel. We've just been talking about Easter, recently, and we sang about that here tonight, this morning. That's the truth of the gospel. But also, what is true is that, as it says in Colossians 1, also, that we are called to walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, to please him in every way, to bear fruit in every good work, and to grow in the knowledge of God. That we have to live, we are called to live a life that's honoring to God. So to me, that what I will say here for these few minutes, and then tonight, it is said with that as the foundation that I believe we should stand on. So let me begin with just giving you a little bit of an idea regarding scale and content, because this may be, again, a conversation you may be new to. The largest tube site, which is, think of YouTube, where people post user-generated content. It can be pirated. It can be original. Reported 92 billion views. This is one website. One website posted 92 billion discrete views in 2015 or 2016. With 1.5 terabyte of content viewed every second. That's equal to 150 films viewed every second by this one website. Aggressive acts. There's a research study that was done where they looked at over a 6-month period, 250 of the top purchased porn videos, 250 of the top rented porn videos, combined those, pulled out duplicates, randomized them, selected 50 films, and looked at every scene in those 50 films. So just to get an idea of what usually takes place, In those films, aggressive acts such as slapping and gagging were depicted in 90% of the scenes, with the majority of those, 88% of those scenes, with it being physical, these aggressive acts being physical versus verbal, which occurred in 48% of the scenes. Women were the recipients of 95% of these aggressive acts, with 95% of those aggressive acts being received as pleasurable or emotionally neutral. So the reason I want to say this is that pornography as it exists today, and I do want to say that when people use the word pornography, if you're from my generation, I don't know if an image comes to mind, but you think of Playboy. That's kind of how pornography, when I think growing up, that's how it was thought of. But that is no longer the case. The term softcore porn doesn't really exist, for sure, in the research literature and not really in any place. When people say what they think of as softcore porn is just culture, stuff you would find on HBO or some Netflix shows or, you know, Game of Thrones or Girls or something like that. Whereas now when you say the word porn, it's far harder because it's having to distinguish itself. And this will be referenced in the documentary tonight, the difference between these two. It has to distinguish itself, and the way it does that is by becoming increasingly aggressive and dramatic. So this is important to realize because this way that they separate is through these aggressive acts many times. And what it does, it develops a script. And this is why it's so important for parents to consider this issue, because you may think, you know, it's not a big deal, or this is where a person learns about sex. But let me tell you, the script that can be developed after you see that enough is start to realize, well, maybe that's nothing I would want to do, but a plausibility starts to be developed. So this is why if you're at a university and we were talking this from a feminist perspective, that it has such a problem because women are framed in a certain way. And that is a theme that you will see throughout pornography, is being aware of how women are portrayed and how men treat women. And that script and that way of relating that I think is one of the worst effects that pornography has in the culture that we are part of. Sex is uniquely powerful. And this is true for any conversation that we would have about sexuality, but sex is uniquely powerful and affects us in deep ways. Therefore, sexual sin affects us in equally deep and enduring ways as well. If someone has sex with someone, they said, that didn't mean anything to me. It doesn't mean that that was not meaningful. It just means they didn't recognize the meaning of that. Sex always has objective meaning. I don't get to decide whether or not it was meaningful. It has objective meaning. And I believe with pornography and sexual sin, we have to come to terms with this objective meaning that occurs. Two passages that I think are central to understanding this are Ephesians 4:27, which says, do not give the devil a foothold, and Romans 13:14. Do not put on the Lord Jesus and do not make provision for the flesh and its lust. Hey, Dave, I need you to help me with an object lesson. You know, when you're speaking on pornography and you ask someone to help you with an object lesson, you don't get a lot of volunteers, but Dave, I already gave him a heads up on that. So I used to live in Saskatchewan. I'm from Texas originally. You've kind of probably noticed the accent. Yeah. And I lived in Saskatchewan for a couple of years before I moved to BC, and I roomed with this guy named Kevin Mann, and he was the toughest individual I have ever personally known in my life. He was a kickboxing instructor. He was about 220 pounds, and he was just much like my friend Dave here. Yes. And so I was trying to give him some tips. I mean, you know, clearly I'm not of the same caliber as my friend Kevin. So I said, so what's the difference between boxing and grappling, these terms? He said, okay, if I was teaching you about boxing, what I would try to do is, when I would go to hit you, that I would try to hit you, it sounds odd, as quickly as I can. I don't want my fist to be on your body that long. But when it is, I want it to transfer as much, and he used this word, trauma, to you as possible. So when I hit you on the chin, my fist doesn't stay on your chin long, but everything I can muster tries to, as quickly as possible, hit them. He said, now with grappling, different story. So if we're grappling and I grab Dave's arm here, this point of contact is going to be the source of all kinds of chaos in Dave's life from this point on. I'm going to take you and jerk you and yank you and do everything I can to destabilize and to make the rest of Dave affected by this grip right here. You can have a seat now. So to me, this is a perfect picture of how pornography can have an effect on someone and how these verses are relevant to this discussion. Where it says, do not let the devil get a foothold in your life. Because using pornography, allows at that point Satan to grab a hold of our lives. And it's out of that so much destruction can come. The shame, which I know is one of the things that for a Christian can be so debilitating, is this feeling of condemnation and feeling that you are, God hates you and that God can never use you. At the church I was at, there's a fellow that was working through this issue. And I said, well, one of the ways to on the road back is for you to serve, is to, you know, get, you know, help out at church. And I said, hey, how about handing out a bulletin when you walk in the door? That's an easy way to connect. And he could not even consider doing that because of his porn use. I just couldn't believe how that aspect of his life was completely destroying any capacity for serving at our church. And to me, this is a perfect example of how Satan can use that and in other areas of his life bring destruction. Because when a person uses pornography, it engages them with three areas that that are spiritual and are forceful in a person's life. They gain a foothold for the devil to gain a hold of them, just like we read. Second is that we make provision for the flesh and its lust. If you read Galatians 5, this passage is clearly stated there that the flesh and the spirit are at battle with one another. And when I step into this, there's a side of me, the sin nature that Christ is constantly trying to work down and eliminate from my life. It just roars to life. So it allows me to engage that when I engage pornography. And finally, it engages me in a wicked industry that with every click, there is a consequence. There, the digital exhaust of our lives has consequences that we have to take into account. So by clicking on that link, it's not just like smoke that just appears. That is cataloged somewhere and eventually is monetized. So by clicking and engaging this, we necessarily engage an industry. Okay, we're going to keep moving quickly here. To me, in setting the base, there are two things. This idea of transforming our minds and transforming our emotions. Because without a doubt, growing in Christ, and whatever issue, we're talking about pornography here, but whatever the issue may be, that it begins with Christ transforming our minds. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. That is a central verse when we think of how we change and grow spiritually. And everything that we need for life and godliness is found in our knowledge of God. All right, so how does this happen? Spiritual change is connected to how we think, and we change the ways that we think. One, by exposure to repeated messages of truth. That's why it's so important that you're here in church. It gives you a chance to be reminded, okay, this is what's true and right and pure and holy and excellent. That's why I know this church encourages you to read your Bible, to continually have exposure to truth to recalibrate you. It's like the waves lapping up on a shore. And next, through repeated experiences of living something out. Like I learn that my faith is true, that Jesus provides for my needs when I actually step out in faith. When there's, and those steps and that understanding of God, I only get by taking that step of faith. Somebody can tell me about it, but there's a side of knowledge of God that only comes through me taking that step myself. If it means giving sacrificially in a monetary wise or giving my time or stepping away from something, that all that together gives me a knowledge of God. But there are two important steps that that are key to this. Is that, and this is something that I have come just talking to a lot of people, is be very aware of the issue of self-pity. To me, self-pity is one of the biggest engines that drives use of pornography. And the scripts can be, well, if my husband or my wife was a little more sexually available, or if my husband was a little more sexually available, then I might be, then I wouldn't look at porn, which of course the spouse would say, well, if you stop looking at porn, then maybe I'd be more available to you. So there's this cycle that goes on, or a single person saying, well, you've got to learn about sex somewhere. This is a way that a person learns how sex is done, what it looks like. Which, let me just say, understanding how sex works within a marriage and understanding sexuality is completely normal. And that having a vibrant sexual experience with your spouse is a very worthwhile aspiration. But that will never go through pornography. It will never go through, you cannot get there through pornography. And I know for the young people here, like I said, I've got two teenagers myself. Being curious about sexuality is completely normal and completely appropriate. But the place that you learn about that makes all the difference. And that's why having this conversation here this morning is important, and tonight, and when the youth group that you're a part of and the families that you're a part of, is that these subjects are addressed in a place where sexuality and understanding what it is to follow Christ are discussed together. So that, to me, is why this is it's so important. And be aware of rationalizations, because this is one of the ways that we can get, and I think these rationalizations are unique to each of us as individuals, of ways that we can make space for engaging in pornography that in some way is a rationalization. And to me, we have an amazing capacity to rationalize. Perfect example. At the office that I work in, well, Dave, you may remember this, occasionally we have breakfast every about once a month or so, and different departments bring whatever we're going to eat for breakfast. Well, when my department comes up for that, I bring yogurt and granola. I know there's no magic, but together they're a good thing. Well, I usually go to Save On Foods to get the granola, and I go to the bin that says pecan apple granola. But let me tell you, there's no pecans in the pecan apple granola. I don't know if it's memories of pecans or dust of pecan or I don't know what, but there are no pecans in there. Well, I see that, and I think, I mean, look at the label. It says this. So I go over to the pecan bin and fire in a couple of shots of pecans just to keep it real, you know, because, I mean, it's got to have pecans in the pecan. But you know what? That's a problem. You're not supposed to do that. And I know it's a problem. You know how I know it's a problem? Because I look over my shoulder before I do it. Because I know if one of the Save On More security officers were to come by, I could be in big trouble. So to me, this is a perfect example of how I'm thinking, well, Save On makes lots of money. I'm sure the sign says pecan and there are no pecans. Therefore, this is okay. Well, I think that's a silly example, but the same is true about sexuality. We can create a space where we begin to think that this is okay. And to me, that is something that you have to be aware of and understand what those scripts are and bring other people into your life to help you. And we're going to talk about that here in just a moment on accountability. Okay, so transforming your mind. If there was one passage that I would encourage you, parents and people, just anyone, to memorize, this passage got me through my PhD as I studied this content, is this Philippians 4 passage. Whatever is true, honorable, right, pure, lovely, if there's any excellence in anything worthy of praise, let your mind dwell on these things. Parents, I would so encourage you to memorize that passage. It helps me. I just remember Thurple, T-H-R-P-L-E, Thurple. I know it's weird, but that's how I remember it. To pray this for your children. When you tuck them in at night or you're praying for them, Father, I pray that their minds would be focused on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely. And let that be a guide for you interceding for the people that you care about. So to me, this is such an important verse, or it has been. Next, the idea of transforming our emotions. Again, when Jesus was asked what the greatest commandment was, he talked about what we loved. He didn't talk about what you think. He said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor yourself. It's about your heart. That is what he is focused on. And how is this done? Our lives are in many ways directed by what we allow ourselves, our heart to be turned to. Because the thing is, St. Augustine, this was one of his great gifts to the church, was that ultimately we are lovers. We are not thinkers, we are lovers. Because ultimately, what we do with our lives, what I do with my money, what I do with my time, will eventually line up behind what I love. So if my body is going this way, but my heart, let's see, is directed to that music stand, I can go for a while, but ultimately my body lines up behind where my gaze is. That ultimately what we love shapes the direction of our lives and ultimately our time and our money and all the things that come through our hands. So to me, part of addressing this is understanding, is asking God to change your heart, for him to be directed, begin to direct your heart in new ways, and asking God to transform you in that way, that you begin to love the things that are worth loving. And so that when you see pornography, you have the chance to, you think, okay, why would I do that? I mean, I always joke around saying, no matter how thirsty I get, I may be in my house and let's say the water's turned off and I am so thirsty, it never occurs to me to go put my head in the potty and take a drink out of the toilet. I don't care how thirsty I am. I never think I'm going to address my thirst with that. The same thing should be with pornography. No matter how much, you know, turned on I am, that is not the way that I address it, because my heart, I don't want my heart to be drawn to that. So to me, this is such a key, and a great passage here for us to memorize is Psalms 139. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there's any hurtful way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. All right. So practically, what steps can we take? Let me see how to best use our time here. I want to show a short video to you that gives you an idea. This is one of these ASAP science things. It's a secular thing. It's not a Christian deal. They explain lots of physical phenomena in our world. And this is on how pornography physically affects a person. It's called neuroplastic change, that if you experience pornography in a repeated way, it starts to change the way that your brain works in such a way that it becomes increasingly difficult to stop looking at that. So let me advance the slide here, and I think you have to begin the video from up front.
Sexual tastes vary from person to person, but with the current pornography epidemic, as some call it, one has to wonder how exactly this may affect our desires and perception of sexuality. Moreover, how does it affect our sex lives? Pornography constitutes about 25% of all search engine requests and is the fourth most common reason people give for going on the internet. And while it may seem to simply facilitate an instinctual sexual response linked to millions of years of evolution, the truth is, pornography has dynamically changed over time, ultimately molding our tastes and desires. The not-so-shocking truth is that pornography has profound consequences for the brain and acts in many ways like a drug. With prolonged exposure, your tolerance is increased, and many often find themselves addicted. Though it's not a physical substance, it leads to the same general loss of control, the compulsiveness to seek out the activity despite negative consequences, and withdrawal when it goes away, much like that of gambling or running, for example. The issue is that continued exposure can cause long-term or even lifelong neuroplastic change in the brain. Dopamine is released as a reward whenever we accomplish something, whether it be eating to sustain life or sexual activity to produce future life. And this dopamine consolidates neural connections in order to drive us to perform the same activity in the future. In other words, it alters and forms the brain cells to motivate certain actions. It rewires your brain. The National Institutes of Health measure drug addictiveness by testing rats. The rat is trained to press a button in order to get a drug, and the harder it works indicates how addictive the substance is. It turns out that the more addictive a drug is, the more dopamine we see released. And while there is, unfortunately, no rat porn that we can give to them, we do know that dopamine is also released during sexual excitement, which pornography plays right into. The more time you spend doing it, the more dopamine gets released, which reinforces the behavior and makes you not only desire it in the future, but require it. And as you begin to imagine these images away from the computer or while having sex, they become reinforced. Furthermore, each orgasm releases even more dopamine, which consolidates the connections made during the session. It's a feedback loop that becomes harder to escape. And just like a drug, your tolerance for visual stimulation has now compounded, making it more difficult to be turned on by reality. Pornography addiction can often lead to finding your mate less attractive. The good news is, it doesn't have to be permanent. Usually when people understand the mechanism and realize it's affecting their relationships, they can stop. The brain is often described as a use-it-or-lose-it system because the neural connections you stimulate grow stronger and desire to be activated, while the ones you ignore become weakened. Much like your muscles, which, if sitting still all day, itch for activity, but after prolonged non-use, they become complacent. Luckily, because of this use-it-or-lose-it brain, the same neuroplastic system that proliferates these habits can also be used to acquire healthier ones. Got a burning question you want answered? Ask it in the comments or on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe for more weekly science videos.
All right. Well, that gives you at least a little bit of an idea of the ways that pornography affects a human person, because sex is so powerful. Pornography then co-opts a very powerful process and forms someone. I know someone for whom pornography has completely stolen the intimate side of their relationship with their wives. With their wife, sorry. They only have one. Did I say wives? Their wife. And that it is, to me, it's classic John 10:10, that the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. But I have come that you may have life and have it more abundantly. That ultimately, and this connects back to what I was saying, the road to a vibrant sex life with your spouse cannot go through Pornville. It cannot, because ultimately that will steal, kill, and destroy. All right. So as far as what can you do, this, if I had one piece of advice that I would give you, that if you are working with people, is to memorize 2 Timothy 2:22. And it says, flee your youthful lusts, pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace with those who call upon the Lord from a pure heart. If you do ministry, or again, if you pray for people that are in your life that you want to see walk in a way of purity, to me, this is the key. Is it run from, run toward, run with? First, run from. Do all that you can to remove yourself from opportunities where it's easy to make a bad decision. I always think of the character of Joseph in Genesis 39, that when he was confronted with temptation with Potiphar's wife, he ran away from her. So doing all you can, if that's limiting the access, if it means getting a flip phone, if it means getting rid, putting accountability on your phone where somebody gets a list of every website you go to. I'm the accountability partner for a number of people at Trinity, so that anytime they go to a website, I see where they went. So it adds a level of accountability for them. Next, run towards. This is, so it's not just turning from, but it's turning towards the things, because that's the key. It's not just stopping something, but it's starting another thing and realizing that what making a step of obedience and doing the right thing offers me is so much better than what this would. When I'm tempted, because in studying this, there are times that I become tempted. One of the ways that I try to deal with it is to think, okay, I want to be a vessel that's clean and prepared for moments like this or times with my family. And I just want to be as available to the Lord. And if I bring this stuff into my life, I feel like it makes me a vessel who's not really prepared and ready to be used in however God would do it. So this is part of the way that I turn towards what I should. And then finally, run with, bring other people into your life and be open. This is such a great discipline to be, to have a part of your life, is to be someone who is open about all the great things in your life, the struggles in your life, because as you get in the habit of that, it undermines this work, which I think is of Satan, for you to say, okay, you got to keep that quiet. You don't tell anybody. This is just you that knows about this. Because when you bring this in, Dietrich Bonhoeffer in his book, Life Together, talks about this, that this is what confession does. When I confess something, let's say I confess something to Dave, now it's no longer this thing between us, but this issue is now here, and it's Dave and I together dealing with this issue. So getting that discipline in your life and being willing to open up can be such freedom, because when it stays in the dark side of our life, it eats us up. It can just eat our bones up. So being willing to be open and let other people know what's going on. Next. Okay, they were just catching up there. What can I do? Dealing with uncontrollable use of pornography can be like cutting down an oak tree. I was talking with an Orthodox priest about this, and he had this great picture, which was so helpful to me. He said, let's say you've got a huge tree that's growing up in the middle of your house, and it is destroying your house. Everywhere you go in your house, you're constantly working around this tree. He said, it is not often that you can just kill that tree in a fell swoop, but you can kill that tree by cutting off a limb at a time until it dies. And dealing with pornography can be in some ways like that. First of all, it's asking God to turn your desires, for Him to help you see what sin is and the price that has to be paid in your life. So first of all, praying, asking God for your desires to be the right things. And that's when that Philippians 4 passage to me comes into play. Next is this idea of accountability. And when I say the words accountability, what I mean is it needs to be more than just saying, I did this. If I am feeling vulnerable in some way, or if my wife is away for extended period of time, I always tell somebody. If there's a website that all of a sudden I'm aware of and I found myself curious about, I say, this is a website that's doing this. I want you to call me in 4 hours. I want you to call me tomorrow, and call me when I see you on Monday and ask me what I've done with this. So it doesn't necessarily prevent me, but it brings this into the light where this idea of anonymity is taken away. And to me, that is a part of the process. It's not just saying, I messed up, I did this, but I'm feeling vulnerable. And the video tonight will address this particular issue as well. So bringing someone into this process, which I think is so helpful. And if at all possible, bringing someone who is spiritually mature to stick with you and pray for you and to help think of ways that you can deal with the issue. And I want to say also that this is not just a male issue. One of the things that often gets stated is that, now it's a guy's thing, but I have come to realize in my work at Trinity that it is a women's issue as well. But the thing that's different along this idea of confession, it is so much more difficult for a Christian woman to admit to this than it is for a guy. In my dissertation, I looked at 515 university students, and for students who reported the same amount of use of pornography, male and female, the women felt far more guilty than the guys did. Because with guys, it's like, okay, that's what guys do. It's not great, but that's not a surprise. But for a woman, they feel far more guilt. So if this is a road that you're walking as a woman, know that you're not worse at all, that you should feel no more level of guilt. This is a human issue. It's not a male issue or female issue. It's a human issue. So being willing to open up with someone, I think, is a key point for men and women. And if someone does open up to you that's a woman, you move heaven and earth to support them, because no, that is a big deal. And one of my responsibilities at Trinity is to coordinate chapel. I've had many times guys talk about their journey with pornography. In 21 years, one woman has been willing to share that publicly. So know that it's a big deal. So if a woman does share, know that your role in that moment is to support and come around them and walk with them through the issue that they're dealing with. Okay, accountability. So good accountability. Here's some questions that I think are key to being a good accountability partner. Is there a time of day when you're more easily tempted? Is there a particular mood where you're most often tempted? Is there a place, again, where you're most easily tempted? Are there choices that make provision for the flesh, that passage from Romans that we looked at? And what is the most powerful rationalization you use to justify your use of pornography? When self-talk scripts are most powerful, what self-talk scripts are most powerful to move you to compromise? This is where this idea of self-pity can come up, where you're thinking, okay, well, I haven't done this for a while. Maybe that's your line. Is somehow it's temporal. It has to do with time or with a relationship, your spouse, that in some way justifies, or whatever the case may be, is understanding, okay, this line of talk I seem to be susceptible to. So letting your accountability partner know that and working through the lie that drives that rationalization. So to me, that's a key point. And understanding the times and places that are most vulnerable for you and avoiding those. Because to me, that's a big, it's not everything, but that is this idea of running from that we talked about earlier. Next eliminating anonymous access. This is some of what I talked about letting someone in on your life. Is be radical in eliminating access. Maybe that's getting rid of a smartphone, having a flip phone, using blocking software such as NetNanny or Covenant Eyes. I know my kids, since I pay for their phones right now, price of admission on me paying their phone is for Covenant Eyes to be on their browser. So I get a list every week of the websites that they go to, because I believe that that's an important part of how they learn to live lives that are honoring to God and are not walled off in these secret places. And the idea of destroying spiritual bonds, I don't know if you guys do Freedom Session here. Is that a ministry that your church utilizes? Our church does. But Freedom Sessions, Freedom in Christ, same idea of praying through in a systematic and extended way strongholds and bonded areas of bondage that may have gotten a foothold in your life. So that can be a great way to deal with this issue and many areas in a person's life. I don't want to in any way communicate that this is the issue. To me, that's one of the real things to look out for, is to not boil all of your Christian life down to, did I look at porn or not? Is that an important issue? Absolutely. But there are many areas that Christ wants to work in your life in, and not just reduce everything spiritual to this one area. Okay, last slide is some selected resources. I encourage you, if you have your phone, and this is something you'd like to do, is just take a picture of that. Finally Free, that's a great book, and Surfing for God. I think those are, as far as pastoral, great options. Research-oriented, if that's something you're interested in. Those, I don't believe, are from Christian sources, but they're very helpful in understanding this issue of pornography. And then websites. To me, the best ones is Your Brain on Porn. This has to deal with the neurological side of pornography and understanding how it affects your brain. Very much connected to Wired for Intimacy. Those books and that website would be similar. And then Fight the New Drug. That is a great, if there was one website that would have the most resources, Fight the New Drug is the place to go. They have tons. If you like them on Facebook, they'll push a ton of content your direction. But their website is so helpful in that road. So I know I've said a lot of things this morning, and for an issue that can be very complicated and difficult, but my heart's desire, again, is that as Christians, that we know that we are holy in God's sight, without blemish, and free from accusation, and that we sin does not have to be master over us. But in the light of that, that we need to walk in a manner that's worthy of the calling that we have received, in a way that is honoring to God, that our lives and the choices we make are honoring to Him. So hopefully we'll see you back tonight. It's definitely going to be an applied section. We'll watch the video. I'll have some questions to sort of get conversation going. You can text in a question if you would like. And it should be a great time to extend this conversation. So I encourage you to be here. All right.